This is the 2014 WAIS examination in English as an Additional Language or Dialect, Stage 3, Section 1, Listening. You will hear two texts. Each text will be played twice. There will be a short pause between the first and second readings. After the second reading, there will be time to answer the questions. You may make notes at any time and answer the questions in the spaces provided in your question answer booklet. Your notes will not be marked. Text 1 will begin in 2 minutes. Use this time to read the questions for text 1. Text 1. An interview with Australia's spokesperson for gender equality. First reading. I am the first voice you will hear. I am the interviewer.
I am the second voice you will hear. I am Sarah, the spokesperson for gender equality.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Greg Williams, and I'm very excited to have with me in the studio today Sarah Woods, who's just been appointed Australia's spokesperson for gender equality. Welcome to the program, Sarah, and first of all, congratulations on this very exciting appointment.
Thanks so much. I must say, I'm very lucky to have been appointed to this position, as there were so many applicants far more qualified and also far more experienced than me who applied for this important role.
So tell me, Sarah, what does your role involve?
Well, it involves promoting gender equality. That is, equality between men and women internationally, focusing on economic, educational and leadership opportunities for women in Australia and the Pacific and Indian Ocean regions. The major focus of my job description is to push for more women in leadership roles in business and politics. And also, my focus will include the treatment of women in the asylum seeker offshore processing centres. As we all know, since the 1960s, here in Australia, we have come a long way to ensure gender equality. But we must not be complacent and think our job is finished. We now need to ensure that women have a voice in the decision-making process. You know, the big picture, the planning for where we are heading in the next 50 to 100 years.
Yes, I was reading an article yesterday stating that not only are women poorly represented in the top managerial jobs, These women earn a lot less than their male counterparts.
Yes, that's right. It is interesting to note that the pay gap between men and women in the private sector in 2013 was 20.8%, whilst in the public sector it was 12.9%. This income inequality is also in my job description, but at the moment it is not high on the priority list.
This sounds a very exciting and challenging position for you.
Yes, it is. In a way, this is my dream job. I have many ideas. My three main aims are, firstly, I want to see more women in our region, but specifically in the Pacific region, elected to Parliament and taking on leadership roles, be it in government or local government, in business, in the community. My second aim is I want women to have the knowledge and the support that they need to start successful businesses in order to increase their families' incomes. Finally, we need to focus on young women, teenagers in schools, and start planting the seeds to encourage them to be leaders of the future. One of my initiatives will be to launch a project called Girls Leadership. It will target teenage girls to work in a voluntary capacity with women who are in leadership roles. A kind of work experience, hopefully, to encourage the young generation of Australian women to think outside the square, to be a little more adventurous in their career dreams, and to aspire to be leaders of the future.
Well, certainly you're a great choice for this role, as you're very passionate about working to promote gender equality.
Yes, it has been a privilege to be involved in various ways to ensure women and younger girls are not marginalised in society. The reality is that women in all spheres of work, such as in politics, business, and even in the arts, experience what has become known as the glass ceiling, an invisible barrier that prevents them from advancing beyond a certain point on the work ladder. The majority of positions of power in education, business, and politics are still occupied by men. I guess my task is to break this glass ceiling so women can move right up to the top of the leadership ladder.
Well, if anyone can shatter this glass ceiling, I'm sure it will be you. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and once again, congratulations on your appointment. I'm sure I speak for all my listeners when I say that you have our full support, and good luck. Text 1, Second Reading. Good morning, everyone. I'm Greg Williams, and I'm very excited to have with me in the studio today Sarah Woods, who's just been appointed Australia's spokesperson for gender equality. Welcome to the program, Sarah, and first of all, congratulations on this very exciting appointment.
Thanks so much. I must say, I'm very lucky to have been appointed to this position as there were so many applicants far more qualified and also far more experienced than me who applied for this important role.
So tell me, Sarah, what does your role involve?
Well, it involves promoting gender equality. That is, equality between men and women internationally. focusing on economic, educational and leadership opportunities for women in Australia and the Pacific and Indian Ocean regions. The major focus of my job description is to push for more women in leadership roles in business and politics, and also my focus will include the treatment of women in the asylum seeker offshore processing centres. As we all know, since the 1960s, here in Australia, we have come a long way to ensure gender equality. But we must not be complacent and think our job is finished. We now need to ensure that women have a voice in the decision-making process. You know, the big picture, the planning for where we are heading in the next 50 to 100 years.
Yes, I was reading an article yesterday stating that not only are women poorly represented in the top managerial jobs, these women earn a lot less than their male counterparts.
Yes, that's right. It is interesting to note that the pay gap between men and women in the private sector in 2013 was 20.8%, whilst in the public sector it was 12.9%. This income inequality is also in my job description, but at the moment it is not high on the priority list.
This sounds a very exciting and challenging position for you.
Yes, it is. In a way, this is my dream job. I have many ideas. My three main aims are, firstly, I want to see more women in our region, but specifically in the Pacific region, elected to Parliament and taking on leadership roles, be it in government or local government, in business, in the community. My second aim is I want women to have the knowledge and the support that they need to start successful businesses in order to increase their families' incomes. Finally, we need to focus on young women, teenagers in schools, and start planting the seeds to encourage them to be leaders of the future. One of my initiatives will be to launch a project called Girls Leadership. It will target teenage girls to work in a voluntary capacity with women who are in leadership roles. A kind of work experience, hopefully, to encourage the young generation of Australian women to think outside the square, to be a little more adventurous in their career dreams, and to aspire to be leaders of the future.
Well, certainly you're a great choice for this role, as you're very passionate about working to promote gender equality.
Yes, it has been a privilege to be involved in various ways to ensure women and younger girls are not marginalised in society. The reality is that women in all spheres of work, such as in politics, business, and even in the arts, experience what has become known as the glass ceiling. An invisible barrier that prevents them from advancing beyond a certain point on the work ladder. The majority of positions of power in education, business and politics are still occupied by men. I guess my task is to break this glass ceiling so women can move right up to the top of the leadership ladder.
Well, if anyone can shatter this glass ceiling, I'm sure it will be you. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and once again, congratulations on your appointment. I'm sure I speak for all my listeners when I say that you have our full support, and good luck. Now answer the questions for Text 1.
Text 2 will begin in 2 minutes. Use this time to read the questions for Text 2. Text 2. A speech on language education in Australia. First reading.
I am the voice you will hear. I am the speaker. Australia has been called the lucky country. How long will that luck last, however, if its inhabitants are not in a position to communicate with their nearest neighbours in Asia in a language other than English? In 2012, the Australian government released a document called the Asian Century White Paper. The paper acknowledged that Australia's diverse population helps to provide Australian people with some understanding of the Asian region. However, the paper also claimed that very few Year 12 students gain knowledge of Asia in the history, literature, geography, politics, or arts subjects that they take in the existing state-based curriculums. Furthermore, any initiatives to increase the study of Asia and Asian languages have not met with very much success and have not produced students who complete high school with a deep knowledge of the region or proficiency in Asian languages. There would not be such a cause to worry, of course, if Australia's performance was similar to that of other countries. However, such observations take on a new importance when we stopped to think that most students in other high schools around the world are competent in more than one language when they leave school. It's common for students in Europe to have at least one other European language, and some students in Asia have a command of up to 3 languages when they enter university. According to the 2012 report, Europe and North America are also increasing their emphasis on the learning of Asian languages. For example, in Sweden, a decision has been made to introduce the teaching of Mandarin to all schools by 2020. In Australia, there is quite a different story to tell. Rather than increasing the provision of languages in the universities, recent years have seen many language programs discontinued. This is especially true of Asian languages. Between 2000 and 2008, Year 12 student numbers in the schools increased by 9%, and yet the number of students learning a tertiary accredited language other than English at university dropped. In 2008, less than 6% of Australian school students learnt Indonesian, Japanese, Korean or Chinese. More Year 12 students studied Indonesian in 1972 than in 2009, and the number of students studying Japanese fell by 16% from 2000 to 2008. The new Australian curriculum will try to build a sound knowledge of Asia in schools. The languages component will encourage all students to learn a language other than English, and the first language to be given particular emphasis will be Mandarin Chinese. But will this be enough? I would argue that we need to look beyond the classroom to solve the problem of language education in Australia. Currently, our so-called multicultural society only extends to experiencing Asian food or Asian holiday destinations. We need to teach students about Asia, including its history, religions, worldviews or politics, in order to motivate them to learn Asian languages. Currently, school subjects do not focus on Asia to any great extent. Another way to create the desire to learn a language is to ensure that students are taught about the new culture in an engaging and meaningful way. We should also emphasise the similarities between cultures rather than just the differences. For example, teachers can make bridges into new cultures through current music and fashions, as well as the social media. Another consideration is the importance attached to languages. Currently, languages other than English are not given core subject status in Australia. Instead, they are chosen by students as electives. This gives the impression that languages are not as prestigious as other subjects. One further thing that we can do to ensure that students learn languages is insist that the teaching of languages is of a very high standard. Quality teacher education for language teachers is essential if students are to achieve well in those languages. If we are to tackle the problem of Australians speaking only one language, we need to be creative in our responses and realistic about why Australians seem to have no desire to learn a language other than English. We need to consider the reasons and act quickly before Australia loses its credibility as a major player in the Asia-Pacific region. Thank you for listening to me tonight, and good night.
Text 2. Second reading.
Australia has been called the lucky country. How long will that luck last, however, if its inhabitants are not in a position to communicate with their nearest neighbours in Asia in a language other than English? In 2012, the Australian government released a document called the Asian Century White Paper. The paper acknowledged that Australia's diverse population helps to provide Australian people with some understanding of the Asian region. However, the paper also claimed that very few Year 12 students gain knowledge of Asia in the history, literature, geography, politics, or arts subjects that they take in the existing state-based curriculums. Furthermore, any initiatives to increase the study of Asia and Asian languages have not met with very much success and have not produced students who complete high school with a deep knowledge of the region or proficiency in Asian languages. There would not be such a cause to worry, of course, if Australia's performance was similar to that of other countries. However, such observations take on a new importance when we stopped to think that most students in other high schools around the world are competent in more than one language when they leave school. It's common for students in Europe to have at least one other European language, and some students in Asia have a command of up to three languages when they enter university. According to the 2012 report, Europe and North America are also increasing their emphasis on the learning of Asian languages. For example, in Sweden, a decision has been made to introduce the teaching of Mandarin to all schools by 2020. In Australia, there is quite a different story to tell. Rather than increasing the provision of languages in the universities, recent years have seen many language programs discontinued. This is especially true of Asian languages. Between 2000 and 2008, Year 12 student numbers in the schools increased by 9%, and yet the number of students learning a tertiary accredited language other than English at university dropped. In 2008, less than 6% of Australian school students learnt Indonesian, Japanese, Korean or Chinese. More Year 12 students studied Indonesian in 1972 than in 2009, and the number of students studying Japanese fell by 16% from 2000 to 2008. The new Australian curriculum will try to build a sound knowledge of Asia in schools. The languages component will encourage all students to learn a language other than English, and the first language to be given particular emphasis will be Mandarin Chinese. But will this be enough? I would argue that we need to look beyond the classroom to solve the problem of language education in Australia. Currently, our so-called multicultural society only extends to experiencing Asian food or Asian holiday destinations. We need to teach students about Asia, including its history, religions, worldviews or politics, in order to motivate them to learn Asian languages. Currently, school subjects do not focus on Asia to any great extent. Another way to create the desire to learn a language is to ensure that students are taught about the new culture in an engaging and meaningful way. We should also emphasise the similarities between cultures rather than just the differences. For example, teachers can make bridges into new cultures through current music and fashions, as well as the social media. Another consideration is the importance attached to languages. Currently, languages other than English are not given core subject status in Australia. Instead, they are chosen by students as electives. This gives the impression that languages are not as prestigious as other subjects. One further thing that we can do to ensure that students learn languages is insist that the teaching of languages is of a very high standard. Quality teacher education for language teachers is essential if students are to achieve well in those languages. If we are to tackle the problem of Australians speaking only one language, we need to be creative in our responses and realistic about why Australians seem to have no desire to learn a language other than English. We need to consider the reasons and act quickly before Australia loses its credibility as a major player in the Asia-Pacific region. Thank you for listening to me tonight, and good night.
Now answer the questions for Text 2. This is the end of Section 1. Supervisors, please turn off the sound equipment.